Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name's Eric, with me is my co-host Ray.
Hello.
And this week we got all kinds of news. Pretty much like everyone else on the internet, you've probably heard and or seen releases about the new Space Wolf supplement, as well as the new Death Watch supplement. And everybody's source for all things broken in the competitive scene, Forge World Compendium, that's right, Games Workshop's official 40K rules team, finally got their hands on the Forge World datasheets and have updated them for 9th edition. What unbroken piece of resin have you not built yet? As is it still going to be the ultimate smash piece in your army? We will find out. We'll talk about that, some big changes that have come up in that particular list. And of course, rest in peace, quite a bit of your Forge World favorites have been relegated to legend status. So lots to talk about this week. Plus, we had some tournaments abroad and quick glance at your course the ITC top 10 like we do every week. Ray, how have you been so far? Keeping up with everything?
Trying.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're in the midst of the typical Games Workshop out of the gates. And it's funny because they keep coming out with more stuff. And, Ray, you pointed this out to me. And I went, oh, yeah. And we didn't even get a chance to talk about it last week. Just a quick glance. When you look at psychic powers now, guess what's back? All those little names of psychic powers. There's blessings and witch fires and maledictions. I've no idea why they came back with those. There's no particular rules for them, but apparently every psychic power now has a classification, just like they did in 6th edition.
There's no special rules about it yet.
Yet. So again, it's one of those, I scratch my head and go, if they do have special rules, why weren't they in the core rule book? But I'm confused. But as far as I can tell, nothing's changed regarding those, but every psychic power and every new codex has one of those. So just like we have this new core unit mechanic. So take a look at these new supplements. Very interesting. And of course, we're talking about competitive play. Be prepared to see lots and lots of Death Watch, because Death Watch brings something to the game that we talked about. That's flexibility, game to game. And this is where when this dropped, Ray and I were just going back and forth. These guys are broken. And Ray's like, well, what's so special about them? So Bray's got to hear my rant one more time. Since 9th edition dropped, one of the biggest changes from competitive play, in my opinion, has been that you have to claim your warlord trait, your psychic powers, and your relics have to be on your army list. So you're committed to those for a 3 to 4 to 5 game tournament, depending which one you went to. There were some great relics that were great for game to game. I was guilty of those as well. Same thing with warlord traits. Now that you have to pick, there's quite a few that you're like, that's really good and situational, but if I don't get that matchup, what a waste of time. Death Watch gets so much flexibility. Not only can they switch prior to the game, but they even have additional stratagems and or special characters to allow you to switch mid-game. Absolutely insane. So we'll start with the basics here. Make sure I get the correct terminology for this. Yes, mission tactics. The short version, Devastator Doctrine, Tactical Doctrine, Assault Doctrine, we all know those. Turn 1, Devastator Doctrine, Tactical Doctrine, 2 and 3. Assault Doctrine, 3 and thereafter. Yeah, Death Watch, doesn't matter. They can switch them around. Now, Ray corrected me, well, Necrons can do that too with their new, I forgot what they're called. They're not, are they protocols? Is that what they're called? When you pick which turn each one...
Yeah, dynastic protocols, I think they're called.
Yeah, there's something like dynastic codes, I think, of the chapter, whichever it is. So you choose this one's going to happen on turn 1, this one's going to turn on 2, and when it happens, you can choose one of the two effects. Right, you can, but you have to list those at least at the start of the game. Ah, Death Watch, the seat of their pants. They can choose it turn by turn. So they start the game, I got a long-range firepower, and I need that extra AP1. Devastator Doctrine. How's it working for me? Wow, you decided to charge me. I got stuff on my grill. I'll do Assault Doctrine now. Now I'll go the Tactical Doctrine after I blew you off, knocked you off my objectives. I can shoot you with my rapid-fire bolters. Turn by turn, they can choose which Doctrine they can be. And yes, they have specified the bonuses of the Doctrines does stack with special issue ammunition, which we will get to in a second. Oh, my God. make more fun too. Remember back in the old days, Death Watch used to pick like a force org choice. So, for example, these guys are going to be bonuses against all your troop choices or bonuses against your fast attack choices. That hasn't changed. And you still have the opportunity to switch mid-game. So good news is you can focus down on all the objective secured units and then realize what's left in his army and switch mid-game. You don't have to commit to that during list construction. Absolutely insane. So once again, you can go back and forth, giving you huge flexibility with all these weapons. Special issue ammunition, some slight changes. Dragon fire bolts basically allow you to ignore any bonuses of cover, not just light cover, but also dense cover. So it means you're not minus one to hit as well. Pretty handy. Hellfire rounds are plus one to wound unless you have the vehicle or Titanic keywords. That's actually a bit of a nerf. I'll give them credit for that because that used to be always wound on twos. So I'm okay. My taluses are happy with that. The Kraken one, this is the one that increases your range by 6 inches and improve AP by one. And it is cumulative, as we mentioned before, with combat doctrine. So all your bolt guns in tactical doctrine are actually 30-inch range, AP minus two. So on a regular basis. And you can do the tactical doctrine for 2 turns of the game. And then Vengeance Round was also interesting. This is the one where I think it puts Death Watch over the top, because unlike the lore where it says they're the ultimate in killing Xenos, they're actually pretty good at killing everybody else, including other Marines. And this is how Vengeance Rounds before were an additional AP one, an additional range, I think it was a range penalty before. Now, range stays the same, but you increase the damage of the attack by one. So that means all your bolters now go to damage two. Cool stuff. The other thing that you've already probably heard 100 times already is you have the nifty kill teams, which are kind of cool. So you have 4 kill teams to choose from. And depending on which kill team you take, allows you to mix and match models from specific parts of the Space Marine Codex. And the good news is they are all available to you, so you can put things together. And when you do that, you can then further upgrade them to a specific specialty. And for example, the Venator allows you to reroll ones against, I think that is elites. I could be wrong on that. And if you've already chosen, well, elites are my force war target of choice, you go from rerolling ones to wound to rerolling all wounds. And so you can mix and match. And unlike in the past where you needed your stratagems, they are much like the chapter leadership upgrades where they simply cost extra points, generally around 25 additional points. But it's a flat tax across the entire unit. So if it's a 5-man squad or 10-man squad, doesn't matter. You probably will be taking larger units just to maximize the benefit, but that's kind of the overall arcing there. But the most broken thing that we're talking about here is the kill teams themselves. So the first one is the Proteus kill team. This is the aptly named. This is the one everybody loves from previous editions. And this has the original Marines in them. So it has Death Watch veterans, Death Watch Terminators, veteran bikers, and veteran Vanguard veterans. A lot of words of the word veteran in there. And the nice thing about this one is they get a lot, because they have those standard bolters, they got special issue ammo. If you converted all you guys to storm bolters, womp womp, storm bolters no longer accept standard issue ammunition. But this is sort of your cheap troop option and has all the benefits and privileges of being part of the membership club. The Fortis kill team is Intercessors, Assault Intercessors, Outriders, and Hellblasters. And this is the one that everybody in the competitive scene is flipping out about, because you can take Outriders. Ray, how many Outriders can you take in this kill team?
5?
Any guesses? You got it. You can take 5. And because they're part of a kill team, which is a troop choice, they get...
Believe you're thinking of the rule that allows them to split away, which was
before they split away, they get a nifty thing.
Oh, yep, you're talking
about it before they split away, they get objective secured. So you put them together, they're objective secured. Then you use the combat squatting, and now you got 5 outriders. 5, remember, in the regular codex, you can only take them units of 3, and they're running around being obsec. And by the way, the other 5 are now a bunch of intercessors and hellblasters as a single unit. But wait, there's more. This one's my favorite. The Indomitor kill team. You can choose. It starts off with, I don't know, these guys aren't that popular. No one's talking about them. 4 heavy intercessors and 1 intercessor sergeant. And you can choose up to 5 of the following: aggressors, which got seriously nerfed, more heavy intercessors, inceptors, and of course, eradicators. That's right, folks. 5 heavy intercessors mixed with 5 eradicators, and then you can combat squat them, and your eradicators become OPSEC. But wait, we can top that. Intercessors, by the way, all the Primaris Marines, for whatever reason, their special bolt weapons do not benefit from special issue ammunition, which is a pretty serious nerf. I don't want to underplay that. But there is a stratagem out there that you can convert any bolt weapon that normally does not fire special issue. They can for that round. So being that heavy intercessors already have the executor bolt rifles, which are already heavy 1, that's the penalty, by the way. If you use special issue loadout from stratagem, your weapon becomes heavy 1 and you get all the benefits of special issue ammunition. Well, you've already got a heavy 1 weapon, so the downside is there isn't any. So now your heavy intercessors can get special issue ammunition at the cost of 1 CP per time you shoot it. And of course, you still did I forgot to mention the 5 OPSEC eradicators. And then the last one, I like this one a lot just for fun. But after those choices, this thing's completely irrelevant, is the Spectra skill team. And this is all your Phobos guys, so which Deathwatch had no access to before. It's 5 infiltrators. You can add 5 more infiltrators, 5 incursors, Reavers, or Eliminators. So you've got a couple options there to play with. I like the Reaver option. At first I went, well, Reavers are, you know, overreaching a little bit, trying to make Reavers special again. And because they have a couple options in there, including dropping your leadership by 2 and all kinds of fun stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, one of my friends reminded me, well, don't forget they have the ability to turn off another unit's OPSEC. I just went, oh my God. So there you go. Mm-hmm. So lots of other deep, deep diving going on plenty of other websites and internet providers. Probably the last thing I'll bring up is the much maligned Corvus Black Star. You don't even need to read the profile. Don't even need to find out what's new and different about it. The only thing you need to read is this new stratagem called the Shroud Field. It costs 1 CP, okay, and you can only play it on the Black Star. But if you're on the Black Star and you play it, you can only target the Black Star if it's the closest model.
Okay, then.
That's a pretty cool way to keep your model alive. And so all that, I'm a flyer, terrain doesn't apply to me, obscuring doesn't apply to me, no problem, I'm good. And it's at 180 point, it's 180 points, you're not buying 2 of these. So so many options to change game by game. This army is insane, absolutely insane. And so we'll see what happens. And, you know, the good stuff, the stuff that was good before is just as good as it was in the past. So take a look at those. I'm glad I never threw out my Death Watch from Death Mask. I still have them. So especially because the original, the Firstborn Marines are actually pretty good in this edition. It makes them really neat. Ray, you brought up some interesting notes about good old Space Wolves, which were also coming out and leaked all over the place.
So, I mean, there's plenty to talk about, but I think the important thing is, you have those Hounds of Morkai, which I've been kind of eyeing. As far as the models themselves go, they're nothing too special. It's just unit of Reavers with Space Wolves upgrade sprues, basically. But as far as rules go, when you're going up against certain lists, they can be, you know, a little bit more useful. So they're minimum squad of 5 up to 10. They've got a basic Reaver loadout for the most part. So, you know, 3+ weapon skill, ballistic skill, you know, toughness and strength 4, 2 wounds, all that stuff. They've got a special issue bolt pistol, which is a range 12, pistol 1, strength 4, AP minus 2, damage 1 weapon. And then combat knife, melee weapon, you know, strength user, damage 1, 1 additional attack with this weapon. And then they have the grapnel launcher, which gives them the outflank ability. And when they make a normal move, in advance or fallback. They don't count any vertical distance. Then they have some special rules. First one being the Hunters Beyond Death. They ignore the lookout sir rule if the target is a Psyker. And in addition, each time a model with this unit makes an attack against an enemy Psyker, you add one to the attack's hit roll and one to the damage characteristic of the attack. So those combat knives are 2 damage. It does not specify that it's a melee attack, so I would assume that would mean that the pistol becomes damage 2 as well.
That's what I inferred as well.
Their next rule, special rule, is the Runic Totems. This unit can only be selected as the target of an enemy psychic power if it is the closest enemy unit to the model manifesting that psychic power. In addition, each time this unit would lose a wound in the psychic phase, roll 1d6, and on a 4+, that wound is not lost. So it doesn't even specify that it has to be from a psychic power. It's just a wound that happens in the psychic phase. And a 4+ is pretty good for stuff like that. Their last ability is Morkai's Howl. Is an aura ability. When an enemy psychic unit is within 18 inches of this unit, you subtract 1 from psychic tests taken for it. And the next sentence is, while that psychic unit is within 6 inches of this unit, you subtract an additional 1 from psychic tests taken. So if you got this unit within 6 inches of a psyker, they're rolling at -2.
So a lot of options. At first I went, okay, you're a sniper, but you're a 12-inch sniper with those pistols. So I kind of went, eh. And I thought, well, if they get in close, then they start sniping out the psychic abilities with the -1, eventually the -2. But I'm like, that's not going to be that great because you're going to be stuck in spite range. But you mentioned you have the 4 up in a protection from wounds taken in the psychic phase. Not too shabby. Once again, they still have the Reaver keyword, shutting down OBSEC and shock grenades as well. I just went, oh, okay. Time to put the Craft World Army back on the shelf. Because those guys easily can take out a Farseer. No problem.
Yep.
So, and then I'm thinking like even like Gene Stealer Cult, like a Magus or something like that. Then I even thought, okay, I forgot the Gene Stealer, the big guy, the big Gene Stealer HQ unit. Forgot his name.
The Patriarch?
Yeah, the Patriarch. He's a Psyker as well, correct?
Yes.
So he falls into that category as well. So granted, I think it's a one-shot deal. You know, it's a one-way ticket. Either the Space Wolves or the Patriarch lives through that round of combat, but that's a lot of fire, you know, that's a lot of opportunity kill right there. So pretty cool stuff. Now, one thing I wanted to pick your brain on this, Ray, was, like you said, it's nothing special in terms of what you're getting. It's the Reaver kit and the Space Wolf upgrade kit. And basically, it's, for all intents and purposes, a sanctioned kit bash.
Yep.
You know, somebody in the, all of a sudden, everywhere I've looked on all the competitive sites, as well as some of the more fluffier sites, but usually more faction specific, what if our faction gets something like this too? Mm-hmm. What would you like to see? So there's some interesting ideas, and I'm curious to pick your brain. Is there a faction out there, like if I could mix this kit, these parts from this part from a particular faction and create a whole new unit, what would you make?
So here's something I expect, and I was talking to someone I know who plays Dark Angels, is I actually expect like some sort of Deathwing Blade Guard that actually have the rules, that the special rules that Deathwing get that the Blade Guard wouldn't necessarily get. And the same could be said for the Outriders and the Raven. So rules like Inner Circle.
That would be interesting. I have a feeling those are actually, I've heard rumblings that those rules are in place. They've made like hints that.
So they get
like the, now Outriders get already
the
get
Ravenwing and the Deathwing rule, keywords. But that doesn't necessarily give them, and it's something I noticed pretty quickly, is it doesn't actually give the Circle special ability. And then another example of something we are actually already see, which is the Death Company Intercessors, which include the Assault Intercessors.
Oh, yeah, that would not be nice. Yeah, the one I've seen a couple times, surprise, surprise, on the Chikari page was bringing back Blood Brides and Trueborn. So for those of you who don't remember, there once was a time, and basically the design philosophy of Games Workshop was real simple. So you have the troop version, where like for every 5 models, you get 1 special guy who has a special gun. And then the elite choice was you could have up to four of those special guys. So that was the, so for Cabals, you could take basically five Cabalite warriors. I think they had like plus one leadership or something silly like that. But the important thing was is they could take four special weapons. So you had these five-man squads with four blasters in a Venom flying around, taking down everything in sight when it came to anti-vehicles. And Blood Brides were the same thing. They were basically witches. I think they had plus one attack. And I want to say they could take up to four witch weapons, which at the time was pretty cool. Because at the back in the old version, the troop version could only take like one witch weapon at a time. So just mixing and matching kits that way, which would be an interesting way of bringing back an old unit and an old favorite unit. And then, of course, we saw preview models, what seems like eons ago. We all assumed it's Lilith, but maybe that's what we're looking at, is perhaps a return of Blood Bride units. So who knows? Also thinking like Harlequins could probably benefit from something, because I mean, you've only got six units in your codex. It's a little hard to come up with some new ideas. So I don't know. It's a wild, crazy stuff. But a very interesting unit, and a very interesting new philosophy by taking existing parts and mixing and match together. From the business side of me, thinks it's fantastic. I'm a big proponent of ever watching that Lego documentary. And if you ever see it on Netflix, you gotta have to watch it. Lego was almost out of business. And the way they got around it was they basically said, we're going to cut our production by 70%. And you Lego masters who say you can build anything out of anything, you have to be able to do what you always did with, basically fewer bricks. And they did it. I mean, fewer custom bricks. And that's why I've always believed Games Workshop needs to do the same thing. Come out with great rules, great codices with fewer units, and so you can cut your production costs down. And I think this would be a great way to do that. I think it's brilliant. But anyway, it's a bit of a tangent. So what else do the Wolves of Fenris bring to the table here, right?
Kind of more of a personal thought. I am really thinking about playing them.
they have a lot of, a lot of things that made them good. Here's the, they were actually good last edition, just no one got to play them because their Psychic Awakening came out and then COVID hit. So no one actually got to see them on the table. So probably the biggest thing that's changed, some people are going to be upset about, but it seems to be an overall design change, is they figured out weight of dice actually kills a lot of things. So they've definitely reduced the weight of dice effects. Ragnar is not quite the blender he used to be. He's still really good, but he's not like him. And Gassero Khan was another one, from White Scars that just, charging with nine attacks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're just not going to see that anymore. Mm-hmm. But the sagas are still there, which are, their warlord traits and with bonuses if you do something, each one has their own specific deed. And if you do it, you get that in an aura ability. That's pretty cool. One of the mainstays of every competitive list was the Wolfenstone. That's changed. It's no longer plus one attack, as I mentioned before. Instead, you get a 6-inch aura ability that lets you reroll charges for core units. And then once per battle, lets you choose a single unit. That doesn't need to be core, but any unit. And you normally get exploding sixes for Savage Fury, become exploding fives. So it's kind of nice to get bulking up on extra attacks that way.
Yeah.
And because the Touch of Wild stratagem has been removed. So that's kind of a interesting thing. Everybody was freaking out when they were like, oh, new power weapons and all these new rules, right? You didn't mention frost weapons. What'd you do to frost weapons? Well, frost weapons are still in the game. They're actually still quite nasty. They are special issue weapons, and they are plus one damage and plus one strength. So you can mix and match that with a mastercrafted frost weapon to give them even more killiness. So, and you can imagine putting that like on a Blade Guard Sergeant or something like that, or even a... So that's still around. Pretty cool stuff. They tweaked the psychic abilities a little bit. Keeping in line with ninth edition with new secondaries is what I'm trying to say. We didn't go over the Death Watch secondaries. We will in just 1 second. I need to go back to that. But the one that really strikes me here is Glory Kills. Mentioned flexibility. It is it's in the Purge the Enemy grouping. And basically it mixes assassinate with bring it down. So you get 5 points each battle round if you wound or kill a character or a monster. Don't have to kill it. Just have to put some wounds on those guys. So it makes it a little bit easier than just taking down vehicles. And be able to, you only have to do that 3 turns. That's a pretty easy 15 points if you need that third secondary to shore things up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was pretty cool. So the other fun stuff in there, I mean, overall, this it's a really cool book. They have a stratagem. You play it in the command phase, pick a unit. And for that unit, it's the assault doctrine. Very handy for a close combat army. It just feels like this is a very... One thing that always ran into a problem was all the power army assault armies felt the same, and they don't. So this one doesn't. It's an assault army, but it's not played like Blood Angels at all. Pretty cool stuff. Trying to find it again. I remember you saw it, Ray. The ability where pretty much every unit gets heroic intervention, and then the characters get a 6-inch heroic intervention. I'm trying to find that.
No, I think they changed one. Hold on. It's their chapter protected, right?
Some returning favorite. Yeah. All right. So there's a new stratagem called Countercharge, and that means that gives you the characters, gives you a 6-inch heroic intervention. The interesting thing about this one, it's a 0 CP cost.
Yeah.
and then the chapter tactic. Yeah, there we go. So that's pretty. So everybody's, so they're charging on your turn, which is always great. So watch your positioning. Pre-measure. That's all I can say. As promised, Death Watch had a secondary as well. Wanted to go over that real quick simply because I found this very curious that Death Watch has a secondary that they took from the terrain book. And there were some really good ideas in that terrain book, but I don't think it's going to catch on. And that is called Cripple the Stronghold. It's on the Shadow Ops group. And you choose one objective marker designated by your opponent as their stronghold. And you, I believe it has to be in their deployment zone or neutral. It can't be. And you have access to it. Basically, the Death Watch guys, if they can cripple it, they get the full 15 points. It's pretty neat there. Let me see if I can find the exact phrasing for it. Hold on 1 second. I thought it was just very, very interesting. Dun, dun, dun. Here we go. There's two of them, actually, that I want to talk about. Cripple the Stronghold. Here we go. If selected secondary, then after finishing deployment, your opponent must select one of the objective markers on the battlefield located in as their stronghold marker. And objective markers are wholly within the opponent's deployment zone. Then it must be selected as the stronghold objective marker. So it's one in your opponent's deployment zone, so it's on the other side of the table. If selected, then Death Watch can perform the following action. And that is a infantry model from an infantry unit from your army can perform this action at the end of the movement phase within range of the stronghold objective marker. And no enemy units, including excluding aircraft, are within range of the marker. The action is completed at the start of your next command phase. You score 6 victory points each time your army successfully completes this action. So you basically find this one objective and you sit on it like you would raise banners, and then you get 6 points for it. So you get, even if you only do it twice, you get 12 points. It's pretty nasty. And the other one is Suffer Not the Alien. This is another good one. Score 1 victory point for every unit that you kill that has the Tyranid, Eldari, Tau, Orc, or Necron keyword.
Yep.
So if you're playing some of those MSU lists, a lot of them will have 15 units in them for sure. Guess what? You get 1 point for each if you kill it. So secondaries are back, so that's a pretty cool ability. But Ray, we save the best for last. It's good old Forge World. Forge World finally grew up. So first of all, was there a Forge World unit that you were sad to see leave the book and become a legend status?
I don't think so. I think it was pretty just like, okay, I guess this is how things are going.
Yeah. And that's kind of the best attitude I can suggest. If you had something in mind from Forge World and now you get this book and go, what happened? Because a lot of stuff got definitely either toned down, flat out nerfed, or just plain eliminated. Those were your choices. There's not a whole lot that got better. So the cool thing right off the bat, 5 of your favorite Space Marine chapters got, this is kind of weird, they're not rules, but more suggestions on how to run them. So Red Scorpions, Minotaurs, Blood Ravens, Astral Claws, and Karokarodons, the previously horrible Space Shark named chapter, each got their own idea what their chapter, but the point is you don't have to take it. It's kind of weird. I don't know why they just didn't say, these are the rules, deal with it. So it's just strange how they did that. But anyway, moving forward. So Dreadnoughts, so the which were like the stalwart of all things competitive in the world, especially after last year's LVO. A lot of them got pulled in line with the current Dreadnoughts, in that they got the, like, let's take the Leviathan, for example. It went from toughness 8 to toughness 7. Weapon skill is also went down a grade, so it's now hitting on 3s. The shielding, it's basically, it's got a 5-up invul rather than the 4-up invul, so it's not quite nearly as strong as it used to be there. And then a lot of the guns got changed around to be more in line with what we've seen from the regular Codex stuff. So kind of mix and match. Are they still good? Yeah, for the most part. Pretty much the same thing. But it's just kind of brought more in line with what we've seen from other stuff. Same thing with like the Relic Contemptor Dreadnought and stuff like that. If you're a Chaos player, you are pissed as all heck, because everything that made your Dreadnought special got stripped away, and basically you're a spiky version of your Imperial counterpart. Very frustrating.
It's not entirely
like the, no, but it's just frustrating. You know, it's just like, what was it? The Butcher Petard, I think, is the weapon where if you killed something, it caused leadership issues. That's, you know, the whole leadership buff is gone. Here, see if I can check my notes here as I flip through it. They did pick up a lot of the stuff that, you know, they got the minus one to be wounded that the Imperial guys got. That's the same thing. Biggest thing, though, is they lost the Hellbrute keyword. So they lose a lot of those buffs that they got from the other characters, which was kind of sucked.
Right.
Especially from the... yeah, that's a big one. Yeah, like Chaos Greater Havoc Launcher is gone off the Daredreo. So that's...
Really? That's gone?
Frustrating. Yep.
That's weird, because they made that piece.
Butcher Cannon Arrays. Yeah, I know. It's Butcher Cannon Arrays. It got weaker. They're only Strength 7, AP 2, Damage 2. Just weird stuff like that. It's just like, huh. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it. They came out with a new rule. So before it was merely you had like relic items. You know, the idea they're trying to, you could, these long lost patterns were in short supply. So now if you take one of those items, one of those particular units, it costs you an additional command point to bring them in. Mm-hmm. And that's the Marshall Legacy rule. So for example, Chaos Daredreo has that rule. So not only you have to pay the points, you also lose the command point for bringing that in.
Right.
One thing that's been a steady, we've been seeing a lot of these in competitive lists, you're going to see it even more because they upgraded it. I can't believe they upgraded it. It's the Terex Pattern Termite Drill. Mm-hmm. The Melta gun went from D3 shots to flat 5 shots. And it has the new Melta rules, so it's plus 2 to damage when it in close range. Which I was like, what? And when it drills into something, it simply does D3 plus 3 mortal wounds. And unless you're a Colossal, then it does D3 plus 6. And it's still T8. It's 14 wounds now. It's a 3-up save and still holds 12 models. I'm blown away. All that for 180 points. So yeah. Expect to see that in like almost every list. Mm-hmm. Death Corps are back. So those three of you who played that Imperial Guard Army, congratulations, it's there. Custodes are redonkulous. This is the one that's... I actually had to throw the book away when I was reading this. I found it like an hour later in the corner. So Custodian Guards with spears, they get the new Melta rule. So at half range, D6 plus 2 damage. Only went up 5 points. That's it. Secretarium Guard. So it's now apparently they all get damage 2 bolters. So already a popular favorite among tournament players. Standard core unit just got better. Aquila Custodians, as I always had a fun part trying to pronounce this. Some reason they got 5 points cheaper. And their gauntlets are now flat 2 damage instead of D3 damage, which I was like, okay. The Achilles Dreadnought, same as the other, the Gallatus Dreadnought. It's now 9 wounds, still has the minus 1 damage, gets an extra attack. The spear went to D3 plus 3 damage instead of D6. So again, all of those got better. I'm like, what the heck? And then the Telamon Dreadnought, oh, nothing changed. The Plasma Flamer went up to 12 inches to match all the other flamers in the game. It's still T8, still has double shooting if it didn't move. And the only thing that's bad about it didn't get the core keyword. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, and it still picked up the minus 1 damage that all the other dreadnoughts did. Yeah. So I'm just like, what the heck? And then the other source of much tournament consternation is the Ares gunship. It went up by 20 points, and they changed the bomb rule. It's still ridiculously broken. Can be done. The reason why I hated it before was every other bomber in the game, you can only drop it once per game. Some reason this thing could drop it twice per game. They now change it to they can drop it any turn.
Okay.
What? You pick a spot on the board that it moved over. A spot. It doesn't have to be a unit. It's a spot. Mm-hmm. And then every unit within 6 inches takes D3 mortal wounds on a 4+, and it's a minus 1 to that roll, so a 3+ if you are a non-vehicle or monster character. So you're, yeah, so now you've got 2 units and a character within 6 inches of the spot. I'm inflicting mortal wounds on all 3 of them as opposed to just 1 unit.
Right.
I don't know if this is a change for all the bomb rules late moving forward, and this came out first, but I just looked at it like, you gotta be kidding. So,
well, we can keep an eye out for when the next bomber gets updated, which will be the Dark Angels Codex.
Yeah, good point. So, Greater Blight Drone. I know a certain Death Guard player who's on the show frequently. He's already bought 3 of them. 9 wounds, non-degrading profile, plus 1 attack, and comes with disgustingly resilient. Loses regeneration, and then it has the Bile Maul, hits automatically, and is assault D6 weapon with strength 7, AP minus 1, 1 damage, rerolling wounds of 1. And then the Blight Reaper cannon is damage 1 instead of 2, but the Plague Probe is 1 damage instead of D3 damage, so it's a little less, but it benefits from all the aura abilities that Nurgle has. So although its main stat line dropped, everything else is going to get a lot stronger. So it's just great. Okay. A lot of the character demons went away. The greater demons are still there, but the little guys are all gone. They all got legended. If you were in the ITC and you wanted a easy win for best in faction, there were several choices, usually Inquisition, but the other one was Corsairs. Well, not an option anymore. Corsairs are completely eliminated from Forge World. They are legends only.
That's kind of too bad. I guess in some ways the Inari have kind of taken over that slot of the Corsairs. You know, they're kind of a little bit of everything.
I guess. Nothing really covers the feel of them at this point, but those rules were terrible. So I was like, okay, it's sad to see the faction go, but I'm not defending those rules. They were terrible. My Inari army is dead because the linchpin of the army has been changed significantly, and that would be the Wraithseer. So one of the few Forge World models that I have that I actually like. And actually bought because the rule of cool, as opposed to I need something broken in my army. Basically what changed, real simple. It's no longer a character.
Really?
And it's no longer an HQ slot.
Ooh. Dude, that's what made sense about it.
So, no. It's just basically a upgraded Wraithlord. Now, the good news is they got rid of the stupid rules that it only had its 3 Psyker abilities. You can now take Runes of Battle and Smite, like any other Psyker. So that's really cool, but being it's no longer an HQ slot, no longer a character, the days of putting, I think it's called the Lost Shroud, and giving it the Warlord trait, I forgot the exact name of it, but basically I gave it a 5-up Feel No Pain, or 5-up Involve, one of the two, what it didn't have, and then it halved all damage coming in, and then the Warlord trait allowed it to regenerate 1 wound per turn. So basically, I had the equivalent of a Lord of Change with the Lost Robe in Eldari Construct. And my game plan was march it forward. It's got a Wraith cannon, so it can still, or a D cannon, so I can shoot things out of line of sight and still be a threat. Mm-hmm. And then when I get to board center, I would do the psychic ritual and good luck trying to shut me down because I've got all this ability. And if you get too close, then I can still charge you with my strength 9 spear. It was a really cool thing. Now, all gone. All that's gone. So very frustrating with that. I mean, he's still, he's down to 9 wounds. So he's a little more hideable as a character, kind of like the Incarn, but the Wraith Cannon's gone. Spear's a little more reliable. It's D3 plus 3 damage, which is still nice. But yeah, the fact it's not a character went away. So a little frustrated about that. On the other hand, dear Santa, I've been good this year. I would like a Tantalus for Christmas. So both the Tantalus and the Reaper, which have been... Tantalus is sort of... It's something every Drukhari player talks about but doesn't actually use. But the Reaper has been the mainstay in competitive lists since 9th edition drops. And their weapons definitely got a tweaking and made it more in line. So it's not as strong as it was before. It only has 10 wounds, so it's just like a regular Raider now as opposed to the 12 wounds it had before. But the beam weapon is more reliable. I think it's a D3 plus 3 or something like that damage as opposed to a D6 damage. So it's much more reliable. And then you mix and match Dark Technomancer, so it's a flat 4 damage minimum. So that's really cool. Tantalus is down by 90 points, and other than that, really did not change much, except for it no longer has the weird warlord extending his leadership around to everybody. Hard part is that thing is gargantually huge. Good luck hiding it, and also good luck finding a base for it, because it does not come with one. If you were like me back in the day, and you bought all the Forge World Crisis suits, you know, the special ones, the X81s and X83s and all that stuff. Yeah. All got legended. All gone. The only one they kept was the character guy. What's his name? Chassel Real, I think his name is. They kept him around, but that's about it.
Okay.
The Ravana's still around. Remoras is still around. The hazard suits are still around, but they had all these like specialty suits. All gone. The Ivara, that was another fancy version of the, that was like, just terrible. You know, they made some changes on that to make it pretty much useless. The Taunar, still not going to see it. It's 1,000 points.
Yeah, I don't think we're really going to see
it. And it doesn't have the battle suit. Yeah. And it doesn't have the battle suit keyword, so it doesn't benefit from any of the nifty stuff there. Sad to see go. All the Necron. Remember, Necrons had like a Forge World dynasty that was like completely consumed. Like the entire dynasty was all. What's the this guy's called?
They were falling to the Flare Virus.
Flare Virus. Yeah, they're all gone. No, so
I'm kind of iffy when it comes to that because I mean, realistically speaking, yeah, it's, you know, here's the main Arc Empire. What is it? It's a random Necron dynasty that has two special characters that really weren't that special. I don't really remember the rules for them that well, but you had, you know, you had the Cryptek, and then you had a Overlord who is, the biggest thing about him I remember is that he basically had a Staff of Light and a Void Sword, which...
Yep, and he also had some fancy... Didn't he have like a fancy command barge as well?
No.
No, I'm thinking of somebody else. I'm thinking of the bomber thing. Okay, that's what I'm thinking. It's some silly Forge World bomber plane thing. Then maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
There is a bomber for the Necron, but...
But yeah, but the characters are gone. I forgot the name of the Chaos guy. He was a plague guy. And people used to pair him with Poxwalkers all the time. He's gone as well. Necrosis, I think his name was.
Necrosius? Okay. Yeah, he was just a Nurgle Chaos
Lord. Yep, he's gone. And people are like, well, he didn't have a model, so of course he was going to get nerfed. But I'm like, he's been in the book for eons. So.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Anyway, the table of contents is available. Yeah, take a look. Find out if your favorite units are gone. But overall, I still, other than the Custode section, nothing really went, oh my god, uber broken. But on the other hand, that was kind of the game plan, was to even things out. but especially some of the wonkiness, like there used to be this Eldar tank that you could flip flop between a flyer and a hover tank. That's gone. You know, I mean, it's still in the game, but they got rid of that rule. And this goofy stuff like that seems to be out of the way, so that's kind of nice. But no more. I've got a Forgeable unit that has rules that haven't updated in forever, so it creates weird interactions that can be used for nefarious purposes. Don't see it. So anyway, so that's all the fun from Forge World. So all the stuff should be available in the next, it should be coming out this Saturday, right?
Yeah, this Saturday.
Yep. So take a look at your local Games Workshop or friendly hobby store for those items. Meanwhile, we're going to delve into some tournament action. Quite a bit of activity around the world. We'll do that right after this.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
All right, welcome back. We have, as mentioned, tournament action from around the world. Our first tournament is the CWNCO at Concon. Not familiar with that? Neither were we, because it took place in China. And Ray, you had an interesting breakdown of the list of the meta there in mainland China there.
Yeah, so this was a 5-round event. There were only 11 people. And of the 11, 7 of them were Space Marines of one sort or another. So I break that down real quick. We had one Space Wolf player, one White Scar player, 2 Dark Angels players, a Blood Angels player, and a Raven Guard player. Now, that leaves 4 players left who did not play Space. 2 of them were still playing an Imperium Army. One was Adeptus Sororitas, the other, Custodes. And the final 2 players that did not play Imperium of any sort, one was Nurgle Demons, and the other was Orcs.
So you're probably asking, can you tell us about the winning list? I can't. Because not only is the player's name written in the native characters of their land, so is this entire list, which is absolutely amazing. I've never seen anything like it. It looks really cool. I don't know how to read it.
But we can at least.
But anyway, the winning list was Space Wolf. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 5th place was the Adeptus Sororitas player. 4th, Dark Angels. 3rd, Blood Angels. 2nd, White Scars, and 1st was Space Wolf.
And the Wooden Spoon also went to Dark Angels with a guy with a cool name, Green Robe. I think that's really cool, especially for an event in China. It's picturing some like samurai master and just doesn't speak.
That's Japan.
That's a good point. Sorry about that. Speaking of Asian countries, the G-Rex October Incursion took place in Singapore, which was really cool. So a 1,000-point event there. Nice to see some different sized tournaments. Thousands of Suns were able to win that particular event. Moving back to GT level events, we go to Hothfield, England for the Kent War Games tournament. With a name like Hothfield, all I can think of was the frozen north of Empire Strikes Back, but I'm sure it's not that cold yet. Ray, what's our top 5 look like there?
All right, in 5th place was Simon Finney playing Chaos. 4th was Kevin Stone playing Imperial Knights. 3rd was Darren Cooper playing Necrons. 2nd, Baz Croucher playing White Scars. And in 1st was Luke Grant playing Adeptus Sororitas.
Yep. Quick look at these lists. Looks like they're playing with the new Space Marine Codex. Luke's list, he used, starting off with a battalion of sisters, our martyred lady being his conviction order. And start off with the Calidus Assassin from Agents of the Imperium, Celestine, as well as Junith Eridius. That's the one, the special character in the big pulpit. I think that's the one it is.
Yes.
It's got 4. Okay, so I thought. It's got a troop section. He's got 4 units of 5 battle sisters, all with bolt guns, frag grenades, all the usual loadout there, no special weapons. In the elite slot, he's got an Omega Fire with Litanies of Faith. Heavy support slot. This is where he goes hog wild. Not 1, not 2, but 3 units of Retributors with 4 melting. Multi-meltas each. as well as three Blade of Wound ones to soak up some damage, and of course the Squad Sergeant. And two the Amemorium Cherubs, which are cute little guys. So lots of firepower there, but he's not done yet. He's got a Vanguard attachment, also Sisters, but this guy in Bloody Rose. And he's got the Canonists, not one, not two, but three units of eight Sisters for Pensha, and a Zephyrim squad of seven to roll it out, and then three Rhinos to transport the Repentia. So the key word here is strength eight, because it's either strength eight Melta's shooting you or strength eight Sister Repentia's chopping you down.
Ah, the choices.
Yes. Second place, got old Boz here. He rolled up with space white scars. And he came in first with a battalion. It's got two captains on bike, one with storm shield and Astartes chain sword. Hang on one second, a little hard to read. And that is indeed his warlord with the Imperial sword. And then the second captain on bike has Kagorian storm shield.
Wait.
And
these were two captains in a single detachment?
That's right.
Then they couldn't have been that using
the new. Must be not playing with the new.
Yeah.
They're dead to me. Yep, you're right. And just look at that. My fault. Sorry about that, guys. I looked ahead at his troop selection, didn't see any scouts in there, so I assumed, he must be playing with the new edition.
Were there scouts in the elite?
He does not have any scouts in the list. He's got two units of incursors, one unit of intercessors. In the elites, he's got Blade Guard and two Assault Terminator squads. And he's got attack bikes and eradicators to round out the list.
Okay. I think it's safe to say that they're not using the new Space Marine Codex. What about the Necron player in third?
Yeah, I'm going to roll the dice and see what happens here. So he's got a battalion of choose your own adventure. So he has Circumstance of the Awakening and Eternal Conquerors. So
so they weren't playing the new Necron Codex, but our person in second.
But not the new Space Marines.
Which means either they were giving the people the option to play with one or the other, which I could see. I've heard of some tournaments doing that, especially around the beginning of when a Codex comes out. Or, and I don't think this is the case, but it's still technically an option, he played with an illegal list.
Possibly. I have to go through the Codex. Maybe there's an exception somewhere. I don't think there is.
There isn't. So. There's a thing in the new Codex that says you can only have one captain per detachment and two lieutenants per detachment. So if he had two detachments, he could technically, if he's got one in each one, he could have two captains. But not if it's, he couldn't have one from a single detachment.
Which is what he had. All right. So I am curious about this Necron list, because this is something we'll be seeing a lot of. And if you this choose-your-own dynasty is, a lot of people are calling it the Eternal Expansionist is one of the things that people are dubbing it. So what this allows you to do, it takes the best of the Nicolac ability that makes all your units OPSEC, and it gives you a bonus move at the start of the game after deployment. I can't remember if it's a 6 or a 9-inch move.
I think it's six.
So basically you can move before your opponent. It's six, yeah. So basically you can jump forward to get closer to the objectives, and it doesn't matter what you put on there, it's going to be your objective. What else is in the list? Cataphron Command Barge with Hand of the Pharaon, and that his Warlord, and he took the Enduring Will Warlord trait along with the Warscythe. He took a Technomancer, what else he got here for Cryptex, sorry. Phylacterine Hive, Canoptic Cloak, and Veil of Darkness.
Okay.
He has two units of 10 Necron Warriors, one unit of 18. He's got Nightbringer in the Elite slot. In the Fast Attack slot, he's got two units of 3 Canoptic Wraiths and a unit of 10 Trioc Praetorians. He's got a Night Scythe in the Flyer slot and two Ghost Arcs in the Dedicated Transport slot.
Makes sense.
So,
yeah. This is the kind of a list that I actually lately have been expecting to see a lot of. Which is lots of Necron warriors. They're useful. You know, you've got the 5+ reanimation every time you get attacked, and then the warriors get to reroll ones. So that increases the chances of getting stuff back. The Ghost Arc also works towards helping you get those models back again. So it makes it that much harder to get rid of the Necron Warriors.
And it's got the Cryptic in there to also help with reanimation. So keeps those warriors ticking. You surprised me this week about Canoptic Wraiths. I didn't realize they picked up a new ability.
It's not just the Wraiths. It's the also the Spiders and the Scarabs. They now have reanimation protocol without needing us to use a stratagem.
So that was a bit of a surprise. And then Trak Praetorians are in the list. We're seeing that a lot more. The damage due profile. Although they're dynastic agents, they still pack a wallop. And so they don't necessarily benefit from all the dynastic codes. They still are pretty fearsome unit.
Yeah, and I think them being moved out of elite and into fast attack might have also helped people decide to start using them. Although that could just be coincidental. I mean, this is a unit I've been kind of saying, hey, people, you guys need to be trying to use this model. They're good. Since I was using the index back at the beginning of 8th edition.
Yeah, and I've seen it firsthand and definitely agree with that. They are a really strong unit. And I have to look double check. I saw somewhere that if you take the Silent King, he somehow buffs them somehow. I'd have to look at it, what it is. So it's...
Yeah.
So one thing that caught me by surprise by this top five is you got Imperial Knights in fourth place.
That was kind of a surprise.
So we're talking about Kevin Stone's list here. Super heavy detachment featuring Questor Mechanicus, House Volker. He's got an Armature Borax. It's got three of those, all with Graviton Pulsers, a Knight Crusader, and a Knight Gallant. And then he's got a second heavy, super heavy detachment. And this one being, looks like he did a custom household, Hounds of War, with Mobile Combatants and something else from Engine War, also Questor Mechanicus. And he's got an armor war, two Armature Warglaives. No, I'll take it back. Wow, it's written really weird. I apologize. One, two, three, four Armature Warglaives. And he made one of them a character with a Knight Lance in it. But yeah, one group of two, one group of one, one group of one, and then he made a character. So actually, there's only two Knights and seven of the little guys running around. That's pretty cool, actually.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that this list will tend to have issues with is model count.
So kind of a way to get around it and get on those objectives, because those are things that are hard to shift. Even the little guys are hard to shift if you don't have the tools for it. So, although I'm curious how, let's quick look. Did he run into any Space Marines? And let's see, round one. Yeah, round one, he demolished a Necron player. Round five, rather. Round four, his one loss went to the eventual winner, which was he actually lost to a Chaos player in round four. With an Iron Hands list, Iron Warriors, excuse me, which was like all obliterators and demons. That's pretty crazy. Okay. Round three, where's our man here? Kevin Stone, he beat up on Michael Willis, which was playing a White Scars list. But interesting enough, first time I've ever seen a Space Marine list without Eradicators. Crazy. And I think that was I thought that was a requirement. So, and then the other game he played was against another Chaos player. So yeah, he was able to dodge a lot of the heavy anti-vehicle stuff. Yeah. So still good to see that. Other tournaments to talk about real quick. Steel City Showdown. Wait, isn't that the big GT in Pittsburgh? Did I miss that? They did get canceled earlier in the year due to COVID. They did run it as a smaller RTT this past weekend. So our hats off to you and the TOs were able to at least pull something together to get it on the books for 2020. Other than that, a lot of Halloween themed events for this past weekend. So happy Halloween. Hope everybody had a safe Halloween this past weekend. And that'll be all your tournament coverage for this week. Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right, the cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, from drinks to dessert, and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom.
So
So a quick look at your ITC top 10 standings as we round out this week. So yeah, we're coming to the first week of November, almost election day here in the United States, which we don't care who you're voting for. I'm just sick and tired of all these political hats. Oh, my God.
So many.
I approve of this. Yeah. So, yeah. What makes it worse is my cell phone still has my old area code from back east. And that state's a battleground state. And Arizona's a battleground state. So my phone has just been lit up with political text ads and phone calls. And I'm calling from this group, and we want to let you know that this candidate is going to support you in this regard. Can we count on your vote? I'm like, I mean, it literally starts at 4 a.m. because it's, you know, with the time zone difference, it's back east. And this goes nonstop. It just will not end. I'm like, oh. Make it stop. Absolutely crazy. So as you can listen from our tournament coverage this week, none of the big names really had a big impact, and therefore there's very little change in the ITC top 10 for this week. 10th place, Mark Hertel, at 1,008 points. 9th place, Ben Cherwin. 8th place, Nicholas Weiss. 7th place, Mike Porter. 6th place, Johan Nicholson. 5th place, Ruud Steenbakkers. 4th place, Nick Vijay. 3rd place, Colin McDade. 2nd place, Ken Knox. And then 1st place, Dan Sammons with 1,131 points. Yeah, almost a quick math here, 40-point lead over Ken Knox for 1st place. So a comfortable lead with very few events to choose from. Last weekend would have been the SoCal Open if it had happened. Another victim to COVID. So hopefully we'll see some other events between now, but usually these next 3 weeks is kind of it before LVO, because then the holidays hit, not a lot of tournaments, and then January there's kind of that last minute splash of desperate people trying to get a few more points and some practice games, and LVO is upon us. But doesn't seem to be the case this year, and hate to say it, it's looking kind of grim if we even have LVO this year.
Kind of a bummer.
It'd be kind of the altogether just end of the year disaster, but it's been a kind of a rough year, and I just hope, you know, if we lose LVO this year to gain in a real season next year, I think it's a worthy trade. But just want to get back to playing people in person at real tournaments sometime soon. Be really helpful. Mm-hmm. But really miss my friends. Ray, do we have any tournaments next week on the schedule at least?
Yeah, there's a couple. So we've got there's the November Northern Front Open in Calgary, Alberta. The 2020 Renegade Mini GT at Fantasy Flight Games Center in Roseville, Montana. The South Georgia Havoc GT at The Cool Place in Albany, Georgia.
I heard that's a cool place.
And it looks like the last one, because the one right under that has a little thing saying canceled. So that looks to be just those few.
So regardless of the action, we will bring it to you next week, as well as an additional updates as they come through. One thing I forgot to mention, we don't usually talk about Age of Sigmar on this show, but I guess Age of Sigmar has got some new stuff coming out, like a whole new plot line of some sort of new device where the way they come out with new models. They got a new box set coming out, and it's nothing more than like conversion bait, because it's a whole bunch of Slaanesh demons, which are all essential. Basically, if you've already bought your greater demons and you need all support models, they're all in there. So for example, you've got Slaanesh demons, you've got seekers, but I think it's those seeker knights, so they have a little different pose on top. So you can either use them for as is, as Slaanesh sneakers, a little bit different, or you can take the tops off like I'm going to and glue them to my jet bikes and make them Yanari Shining Spears. And then on the other side, you've got all the, what's it, Daughters of Cain, is that what they call it? The witch elf looking guys. And it has a whole bunch of the snake people. So all you Drakkari players who are complaining about it can't get a Slith model, there you go. And then it also comes with two unique models. One's like an armored Slith, which will be really cool. And they got some new Slaanesh champion, which would make a really awesome Greater Possessed for a Slaanesh themed Space Marine army. So pretty rare we talk about Age of Sigmar, but those models are pretty cool. Take advantage of it. And that's all we have for this week. Ray, any parting thoughts at this point?
No, I don't think so.
All right. So once again, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.